do want to thank those who are playing along with a special with our hymnals, and Mr. Packlub for his special music. I did meet with those who perform special music a couple weeks ago, and I've asked them to incorporate special music more into our worship service to God. So hopefully we'll be hearing a little bit more of that. And if you missed that meeting and you're interested in doing something, please get with Mrs. Fowler-Roth, and we can get you on the schedule as well. I was watching Mr. Packlub up here, and I don't know if you like really paid attention when he was playing, but it was really just a little bit of this and some of this. I'm almost thinking I might be able to do that. I don't know. No, he's very talented, and I appreciate him sharing that with us and contributing to our worship service that way. As was mentioned, we are starting our month now of focusing on the Bible and its relevance in our life, and I hope that as we go through this month that you can pick up a lot of things. I appreciate what Mr. Grady put together this morning. Somehow I had a feeling that would be a good subject for him to work with, and I feel like it was. He did a very good job with that, and I appreciate that. I have a very important book up here with me today. It's gotten me out of jams. It's answered a lot of questions. It's helped me figure out things that I couldn't figure out on my own. It's my car owner manual. Now, I use this quite a bit. When I go to change my car's oil, I have to look up in here because I can never remember between the cars what weight and viscosity of oil to use and how much and what oil filter. I need to make sure that I've got the right size tires on my car. I'm using the right brakes and what all these lights that come on my dash every now and then mean and how to get them to go off. Now, I don't have to do what they tell me in here. I don't have to follow their instructions. I mean, I can just throw whatever I want where the oil goes. It's my car. I can do whatever I want with it. I might want to use transmission fluid instead of oil. Maybe it'd be cheaper. I might want to use the wrong weight of oil. I might want to go way off the grid and use maple syrup. I say that because I watched some people on YouTube who did that. It was interesting. But depending on what I put, where motor oil goes, will have a lot to do with how my car runs, how long it will last, what kind of performance I will get out of it, and what it will cost me in the long run. If I decide not to change my oil or use the wrong oil, chances are somewhere along the line that car is going to start losing power. It's going to start doing things that are embarrassing, like smoking really heavy and making a loud noise. If I use the wrong stuff, like maple syrup, I could make my engine worthless, completely ruin it. I can make my car unsafe by not following the guidelines for using the right size tires and putting the right amount of air pressure in them. The owner's manual gives me vital information for taking care of my car and keeping it safe and keeping it running for years to come. And I trust it. I trust what they say in here because it was written by the people who built my car. And I just assume they put some research into that car when they were building it, and they know what's best for it. But just like the owner's manual for our car, God has given us an owner's manual for us. And that is His Word, the Holy Bible. I don't know if you've ever looked at it that way before, but that's exactly what it is. It can help us get out of a jam. It can answer questions for us. It can tell us things to do to get the best use out of what we have, out of our bodies, out of our life in general. It's full of information for us to make life work. Now, many of you may have realized the title of this sermon, Making Life Work, is a booklet from the United Church of God. If you've not read this booklet, I would suggest that you get it and read it. You can go online and suggest it or request it, or you can download a copy onto your phone, tablet, computer, or whatever. It's a very good book full of information to help you realize some of the value of the Bible that God has given us. Many people look at the Bible and think, that's outdated. That information is no longer necessary. That was from an outdated God who did not keep up with the times. Well, God knows what's going on. He knew where we would be today. And the Bible was written for our time, just as for the time that it was actually written. Although written a long time ago, if you take the time to study, you'll discover that the Bible is a timeless book. The things that are in there that tell us how to live our lives are not outdated. It addresses ageless issues and questions like, why are we here? Where are we going? What are solutions to perpetual human problems? How can we learn to live together in peace? How can we live rewarding, fulfilling lives? Can you imagine in God's kingdom when someone who has spent their entire life pursuing peace between nations asks God, what do we have to do to have peace? Why can't we have peace? And God says, you've had the answer the whole time. You just didn't pay attention. God's given us the answers to all these things. The Bible is filled with practical, down-to-earth advice from our Creator. It is for you and me. It can help us see and avoid pitfalls that come with doing things our way. You know, that's our first thought, isn't it? We're going to fix things our way. Proverbs 14, verse 12. You can just write that down. I'm sure many of you, when you hear that, Proverbs 14 and 12, the words just spring into your mind. You already know what it says. For those of you who don't, it says, there is a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is the way of death. Why do we go down that path? Because it seems right to us. The way seems right. But actually, the end is the way of death. Because usually our solution does not involve God. Our solution involves us jumping in and just taking full control of a situation that sometimes we've got ourselves into because we took full control to begin with. The Bible records for us vital and profound lessons from real people. The lives of those who lived before us are recorded in the pages of the Bible for us to learn from. There's good. There's examples we can look at and say, that's the way I need to go. I need to walk like that person did. And then there's bad. And we can look at those examples and think, first of all, we think, well, I wouldn't have done that. But we can at least look at it now, seeing where that took them, and think, that's not the way for me to go. I feel bad sometimes for those who are recorded in the Bible for us to learn from. Because even King David, who is referred to as a man after God's own heart, he may just, you know, ask God someday, did you have to put all that in there? Everybody knows. But it's there as for examples for us to follow. The Bible clearly shows the principles of cause and effect. You know, sometimes things happen to us and we just sit around and we wonder why. Why is this happening to me when we continue to do the same thing over and over and over that causes those things to happen to us? There is cause and effect. Our choices and actions, good and bad, produce both good and bad results. We need to be aware of that. The Bible is filled with sound counsel on how to have happy families, marriages, friendships, how to properly rear children, how to manage family finances and succeed on the job, how to maintain our health, and so much more. In short, it tells us how to make life work. And you can tell by those around us that some people just don't want to pay attention to the words that are written in there. The Bible easily contains a lifetime's education just waiting on us to search it out, to see what's in there, to see what lessons we can learn. It's full of priceless gems and treasures for us. It's a source of spiritual and practical help that you cannot afford to be without. And the ironic thing is, most people, at least in our nation and the English-speaking world, are not without it. The Bible was easily the best-selling book in the world. I think I read somewhere that like upwards of 4 billion copies have been sold or distributed in some way just within the last 100 years. So it's not for a lack of having the Bible with them. It's simply a lack of not digging into it and learning it. Because there's a challenge to living the way of truth that we find in the Bible. Some people may go through and find how they should be living, but at the same time they think, I don't want to do that. People will think I'm weird. We all know what that's like, right? There's a whole room full of people here who other people's families and whatever think we're weird. But they can't deny that we have good lives, that we have a relationship with God, that we're on a path that sometimes they look at us and wish they could follow, but not to the point to really make changes. It takes effort to follow the way of God. Our natural inclination is to go a different direction than what the Bible teaches. And we read that in Romans 8 and verse 7. Romans 8 and verse 7 says, because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, neither can it be. We are that much different from God. We're surrounded by a secular world largely oblivious to biblical values. Either they don't know what they are, or they see no value in the advice that is given in the pages of the Bible. So when we decide that we're going to obey God, we often find ourselves swimming upstream, sometimes being persecuted, being made fun of. But we know that God's way works. And as I said, even though others can see that God's way works and God's way is a good way to go, they don't want to put forth the effort and they don't want to give up control of their life to God. So let's take some time today and look at the advice given to us in the pages of the Bible, this owner's manual that God has had written for us. And let's see what it is that we can do to make our life work a little bit better than those who don't have these words of wisdom. We'll start with marriages. Marriages are the building blocks of communities. Societies and ultimately civilizations are built on this basic building block. If you have a breakdown of a family, it will spill over into society, into the whole nation after a while. And we can see results of that in our nation. It's unfortunate that with all the blessings that we have and all the knowledge that our nation was founded upon, of God and His ways, that we have been slowly moving away from that, and the slowly is starting to pick up speed as we move further and further from God and His way. So is there any wonder that society is breaking down around us, that our nation is literally falling apart when the divorce rate in our nation is 50% or better? Now, some will say that the divorce rate is actually dropping a little bit, and that's true. It has dropped some over the years. But much of that is due to people aren't getting married anymore. The value of marriage is not seen for what it is. People say, I don't need a piece of paper to say I love that person. To me, that's a flimsy excuse for a lack of commitment. But marriage is important. And it's so important that God does give us instructions on how to make it good. But even marriage in our society is under attack now. We want to be able for all 32 genders to marry whichever other part of the 32 genders they want to marry. It's become a mockery. Something that God has set up to be holy and divine and unique, specifically for a man and a woman, to build a family, is under attack and looked at as unfair, not politically correct. From the very beginning, God taught that a man shall leave his mother and his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. That's Genesis 2, verse 24. This wasn't an afterthought that God had after they had been on the earth for a while and thought, I need to do something to help these people to blend together. This was something from the very beginning that God came up with. Genesis 2, verse 24, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. That's a close union. One flesh, thinking alike, doing things alike, living together. This special arrangement, this bond between a man and a woman was intended to last, as the traditional ceremonies put it, until death do us part. This is a lifetime commitment we make when we stand before God at the marriage ceremony. Romans 7, verse 1. Romans 7, verse 1, we'll be reading through verse 3. Or do you not know, brethren, for I speak to those who know the law, that the law has dominion over a man as long as he lives? For the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if the husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband. So then, if while her husband lives, she marries another man, she will be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from that law, so she is no longer adulteress, though she has married another man. Marriage from God is intended to last a lifetime. Marriages that last a lifetime build character. We learn, we grow. We learn to look out for the other person. You can't be selfish and have a successful marriage. It may last. You may stay together. But at least one of you would not be considering it a successful marriage. We have to be considerate of the other person. It can't just be all about you. And as Disney World as it sounds, God expects us to live happily ever after with our mates. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 9. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 9 says, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun. All your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. We're not just to live with our spouse, we're to live joyfully with them. Do you have joy in your marriage? Are you trying to have joy in your marriage? God wants us to have the best life possible. And as with everything, as time goes on and things start happening and you have kids and you have a job, and things will take away from the time that you have with your spouse. And we can begin to take them for granted. And coming home can be less of a joy and more of just a break at the end of the day, where you get to just recharge and rejuvenate. But that's not how it's supposed to be. Coming home should be our time of joy. That's the time we should be coming in and save a little bit of energy for our spouse and our family. Don't leave it all at work. Help them enjoy their time with you as well. Having a good marriage is great for us, because that's what God wants us to have. And it makes your life just very enjoyable. But there's more to it than just our happiness. God always uses the physical to teach us about the spiritual. Having a good marriage helps us better understand the deep, loving relationship between Jesus Christ and His church. Ephesians 5 and verse 25, if you'll turn over there. We're reading Ephesians 5, verse 25 through 33. Ephesians 5, verse 25 says, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot nor wrinkle nor any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are all members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and become joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." Once again, quoting from Genesis. Verse 32, "This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let that wife see that she respects her husbands." We're told to love our wives as much as we love ourselves. And even more than that, as much as Christ loves the church. Of course, this is written to the husband. The same principle does apply to the wife. Again, this helps us to understand Christ's love for the church and what he did for us. How do we get this good, joyful marriage that lasts a lifetime? It doesn't just happen. You know, there's some shows on TV now. The name escapes me, but it's something like 30 Second Bride, or I don't know. These people, they meet each other for a half hour or whatever, and then they make them get married. And they're supposed to be happily ever after or whatever. Of course, surprise, spoiler alert, it never works out that well. That's not how it's supposed to work. The foundation for a good marriage is laid long before the marriage ceremony. And so God gives us advice on how to date, how to treat people before we're married to them. Of course, if he's going to give us marriage and expect that to last, and then he gives us dating that's going to lead up to it, he's going to give us advice on how to date. He's going to tell us how to get there. Now, that advice that's given is not followed today. The world doesn't follow the advice that God gives us. In fact, it's mocked. It's made fun of. It's old-fashioned. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 6, verse 18. (Clears throat) 1 Corinthians 6, verse 18 through 20, we see here Paul getting a little bit personal with the people, giving what may have been unwelcome advice. At least today it would be very unwelcome advice. But is it still good advice today? Is this advice timeless like everything else, or is this dated? It might have been okay for their time, but doesn't work in ours. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 18 through 20. Flee sexual immorality. Every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own, for you were bought with the price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Paul said that our very bodies belong to God. That's how we can know that his owner's manual works for them. He made them. He owns them. He wants us to take care of them. So we should be careful what we do, and that includes fleeing sexual immorality. Again, not the teaching of the day. Sexual promiscuity is the norm. You know, there was a time when living together and sex before marriage was kind of taboo. It wasn't even talked about. That's not even brought up anymore. That has nothing to do with anything as far as people are concerned. Nobody should be telling them what to do. Hebrews 13, verse 4 says that marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. So the custom and practice of dating, which leads to marriage, should be conducted with honor. It should not be devalued as an excuse for sexual gratification. That's not the time for it. God expects us to enter marriage as virgins. Why does God expect us to enter marriage as virgins? Is it just because he had an outdated look? Because he couldn't see ahead and be enlightened by the times that we live in now? This approach shows respect for God, for our bodies, our futures, our future spouses, and the institution of marriage. Entering marriage as virgins not only protects and enhances a relationship with your spouse, it also strengthens your marriage. There are some who say they have to live together first. They have to see how things are going to work out. They have to know that they're going to be able to get along with this person. And they actually believe that maybe this will make their marriage better if they do everything on a trial basis first. 60% of couples who live together will eventually marry. That number is a little bit higher than I thought it would be. I was surprised. 60% of those who live together will eventually marry. However, living together prior to marriage can increase the chance of getting divorced by as much as 40%. Living together before marriage does not strengthen a marriage. It actually weakens it. Having success in marriage involves following the advice that God gives us, and that goes all the way back to the dating process. What about some other things? Does God give us advice on other things? What about our jobs? Does God tell us how to have a good job? Well, certainly God wants us to be successful, and having a good job, a good career is definitely a part of having success in our lives. Now, I'm not saying that you have to have a lot of money to be successful or to have a good life, but God certainly wants us to be able to understand the concept of having a job and working. Can the Bible really give us good advice on our careers today? Is there anything in here about having a job as an IT person or HR? Many of the jobs that we think of in biblical times don't even exist anymore, at least not in our nation, right? I suppose we still have shepherds, I don't know. But there are many things we have today that were not in existence. But not surprising, even though written thousands of years ago, the advice that we can find in the pages of the Bible can help us have success in our jobs today. We live in a world of constant change, but some things have not changed for thousands of years. Our world is far removed from that of the Bible, yet its pages reveal timeless principles that apply just as well today as they did when they were first written. The book of Proverbs is especially helpful, not just in giving us guidance towards having a job or a career, but in all areas of our life. In just the first few verses, King Solomon expresses the purpose of the book of Proverbs. Let's turn over to Proverbs 1. We'll be reading verses 1 through 5. Here's King Solomon writes why it is he's going to write the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 1 and verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. Certainly, we can all see something in those verses that we would want in our lives. And even it says the wise will add to their learning. You're never going to get it all. Simply put, the book of Proverbs is a book to teach us wisdom. It observes hundreds of observations on all aspects of our life. And we can learn from it in many ways. I've always heard it was a good practice to read one chapter of Proverbs every day. There's 31 chapters, and it would take you sometimes a month to get through. But then not to stop there. The next month, start all over again. Because even if you read this every month for every year of your life, I don't think you would still pick up all the knowledge and wisdom that is in there. The book of Proverbs has got a lot to say about a lot of things. So let's look at some of the advice it gives to help us succeed in our jobs. One of the more well-known proverbs is found in Proverbs 6. Proverbs 6, verse 6 through 11. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. I don't know about you, but this time of the year, we seem to have a lot of ants around our house. And they just do not stop working. In fact, we were down at the zoo a couple of weeks ago in Cincinnati, and they had this little ant thing set up. And they had this tube that went from this ant colony to a tree that was like way on the other side of this building, and it just had these little tubes. And you could see just thousands of ants going back and forth, and then just constantly. It was just a constant stream of ants going back and forth. Very hard-working little guys. Some of them. There were a couple. I'm like, that guy's just walking back and forth. I don't know what he's doing. Some of them were carrying like these great big leaves, and this one is just like, hey, I'll just hang out with these guys. But they're very hard-working creatures. So we're told, go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. So who is Solomon talking to here? He's talking to the sluggard, those who are lazy. He's telling them, wake up, look at this. Here's an example in nature that you should be looking to. Look at how they work. First of all, they don't have to have a boss. No one's going to the ant saying, "See, you're not carrying anything. Go back and get a leaf." They just constantly are doing things. And I've worked with people before. They will drive you crazy. You give them a job and you're doing your stuff, and they'll come back and like, "I got that done. What do I do now?" "Well, I don't know. Let's go see you. Go do that." "Okay." And then, 10 minutes later, "I got that done. What do I do now?" The ants aren't like that. They don't have an overseer. You young people who are thinking of entering into the workforce, those are the type of attitudes you need to have. If you see something that needs to be done, do it. You don't have to have somebody tell you to do something all the time. Those kind of people do not get ahead in life. Those kind of people just really, I don't know what their line of thinking is, but it really just drives the management crazy to think I have to constantly tell this person what to do when it's so obvious there's things that need to be done. So don't be lazy. Recognize the need and take care of it. There's so much we can learn from them, and these few verses here, they really cover so much information. And one of the things that really surprises me is how it says, "So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man." Almost like it's a great surprise to them when all of a sudden they don't have anything. I think that's kind of interesting that they do as least as possible to get by. They don't store up for the winter. They don't make provisions when times are good. And that's the way the world goes. The economy's up, the economy's down. When times are good, make good with it. Get in there. Do what you can do. And save up for when times are bad, because bad times come. I'm sure if you talked to some of the older gentlemen here, and ladies who have worked a whole career, they can tell you there were lean years throughout their career. It happens. So we need to prepare when times are good. When you're able to work a lot, pay off the debt that you have. Save up for hard times, because hard times will come. The ants prepare for the future. They're ready for it when it comes. When there's a drought and the leaves aren't there, they have them stored up. They're ready to go throughout the winter because the leaves aren't there in the winter time. They work hard. And that's the lesson there, is the lesson of hard work. No one wants to keep or hire a lazy employee. And I'm not picking on this generation that's out there right now. You young guys, you're wonderful people, but there's a lot of people in your age bracket right now that's giving you bad names. There are a lot of lazy people out there, and maybe it's been this way forever. I don't know, but I have to deal with it personally now, and it drives me crazy. There are a lot of lazy people out there in the world right now, and they're not going to get anywhere very fast in this life. God's intent is that we would prosper and have a good life. We read that in 3 John chapter 1, verse 2. It says, "Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers." Being diligent at work is important. Being on time, doing the job that you have to do, figuring out what you can do without having to be told all the time. So there is good advice in there for our careers. And of course, it only makes sense if God's going to give us advice on how to have a good career, that he's going to give us financial advice as well, right? Now we're getting to some of the advice that people don't like to hear again, right? God's going to tell me what to do with my money? What right does God have to tell me what to do with my money? It's very telling that even with all the blessings that the United States has been given, we have an incredible industrial base. We have business and financial understanding. We have agricultural productivity. And we're $22 trillion in debt as a nation. If you want to know what that comes out to, your share, and this is each one of you, if you have kids, it's their share as well, $67,000 per person. That's what it would take to get the United States out of debt. That's why God gives us financial advice, because even a nation as blessed as the United States with everything that we have, not minding its ways, can end up in debt. And we are for the first time now in debt more than what we produce in a year. But we don't have to be in debt like so many, including our nation. The first step is to remember the source of all wealth. Again, we go back to people saying, who's God to tell me what to do with my money? It's my money. I earned it. Deuteronomy 8, verse 18. Deuteronomy 8, verse 18 is as God's leading the nation of Israel into the promised land. He says, you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers as it is this day. God said, don't think you did this. This isn't you. Remember me when you go into this place. To think that God was taking them into a place that was just so abundantly full of blessings, and they were going to take credit for that. God was trying to cut that off at the pass. Of course, it didn't necessarily take hold. They didn't remember who God was at times and that he was the source of all their blessings. But we need to be careful that we don't forget who God is. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 11 and 12. 1 Chronicles 29, verse 11, yours, O Lord, is the greatness, the power, and the glory, the victory, and the majesty, for all that is in heaven and in earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head above all. Both riches and honor come from you, and you shall reign over all. In your hand is power and might, in your hand it is to make great and to give strength to all. So we see everything comes from God, all blessings. Everything we have is God's. So we need to acknowledge God. And God promises material blessings to those who obey him and honor him with their wealth. We read about that in Proverbs 3, verses 9 and 10. Proverbs 3, verse 9 says, honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of all your increase, so your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. God says he'll bless you if you honor him with your possessions. And so God has set up the tithing system for us to give. And when we give, we realize we're just giving back what is his anyway. He's given it to us, and he asked for 10% of it to be returned to him. So we need to honor God with our wealth. But that's just one of the principles that we can find in the book of Proverbs that lead to success. The Bible is full of timeless financial advice, such as don't put yourself in a position to be responsible for the financial obligations of others. Many have done that. Many have paid a great price for that. Don't just assume that your friends are always going to be responsible. Also, he tells us that God blesses the generous, that we should make work a higher priority than play. Diligence leads to prosperity. Those who incur debt give others power over them. We make ourselves slaves to those that we owe money to. Now, in our society, there are a few things that we have to go in debt for, most of us. Our home, automobiles, televisions. No, we don't have to go into debt for that, do we? But people do. People go into debt for their toys, their boats, and their campers, and all kinds of things that they want stuff, and having stuff is fun. I get it, but we need to be very prudent about how we acquire that stuff. going into debt is not the way to get possessions, because you never really get possessions. You just get debt. We're told to keep diligent account of our assets, to know how much we have, to know where it's going. How are we spending it? There's also many nuggets of wisdom concerning our focus on wealth, such as riches won't profit in times of disaster, but righteousness will. So we have an order there to get things in our lives, righteousness above riches. We're told don't be greedy, and that having a good reputation is more important than having money. Also, we're told don't focus so much on work that you neglect other important life priorities, because we can all let our priorities get out of whack sometimes. And God should always be first in our lives, but even that can get knocked down from time to time if we're not careful. The last area that I want to look at today is health. And I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it, as we have a message in the coming weeks about our health. But God gives us much advice because he wants us to be healthy. Being healthy leads to a more productive, happy life. God instructs us on what is to be considered food, what is not to be considered food. He gives us a day of rest, knowing that we would quickly get out of balance. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8 tells us that physical training has value for the physical body. Exercise is important. We can't just sit around all the time. We need to get up and be moving. And also Proverbs 22 and verse 3 says that a prudent man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. We should do whatever we can to avoid danger, to be safe at all times. Things like wearing a seatbelt when we're in a car. Be aware of your surroundings when you're working with power equipment. And make sure your ladder is safe and secure, and make sure you don't fall off of it. Things like that. Those are the type of things a prudent man sees and takes refuge. We need to be paying attention so that we keep ourselves safe. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 20 says, "We were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." So we're warned against abusing alcohol, something else that will damage our health and our relationships. These same principles should be applied to taking care of our bodies, and that would include dangerous substances such as tobacco and other things like that that we may take into our body that damages it and causes it harm. There's a lot more topics covered in this book, Making Life Work, such as raising children and choosing your friends. And I would again suggest that you get a copy of it, that you read through it, study it with your Bible, and pick out some of these nuggets of information that are in there for us to live by. The self-help industry is a $10 billion per year industry. $10 billion per year people spend on self-help items, books and tapes and whatever. I don't know what they're buying exactly with that $10 billion, where it's all going. I know a lot of it go to books and meal plans and things like that. $10 billion a year. Let's be honest. Most of the advice that comes in those self-help programs are taken directly out of the Bible. If they're good programs and they have good principles and they work, if you dig through it, it's just a rewording of the Word of God. You have the answers you already need. Study God's Word. Realize that the Bible's timeless advice is relevant in your life today, just as much as it was when it was written. Study it, live it, and make life work.